Today, my guest on Gorgeous Lives is one of the world's leading interior designers, famous for her country house look. Her clients include royalty, rock stars, top hotels, and the super rich. For many decades, she has owned her own interior shop on one of London's most she-she streets in Walton Street in Chelsea. She also has her own line in wallpaper, fabric, and furnishing. She is the fabulous Nina Campbell. Hi.
Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. Well, thank you for asking me on.
So this is Gorgeous Lives, so we talk about your life. The beginning, you were brought up in Belgravia by a Viennese mother and a father who's a colonel. Can you tell us about them?
Well, my mother and father moved house a lot, which I think probably bred in me the sort of excitement of going to wallpaper shops. I mean, my mother wasn't really, which she obviously wasn't very English, so she didn't understand sort of regular life like going to the park and playing ball. So we just went shopping, or we went to the cake shop and had sat and had a, you know, well, obviously I didn't have coffee, but she had a coffee or whatever. And then we went to wallpaper shops to buy the new wallpaper for the next place. And so it was rather, and my father had very, very good taste as well, actually. I mean, he enjoyed all of that. And she worked for Queen magazine, so she was sort of busy.
What did she do on the magazine?
She sold advertising space.
Excellent. So she was already kind of in the media, in the kind of happening place.
Yes. Yeah. And it was Jocelyn Stevens, and, you know, so it was all kind of happening and fun. And she looked always like a sort of, what do you call it, a fashion plate. I mean, she was impeccably turned out always. And I think anybody who she said, would you like a page of advertising, they just kind of crashed and bought the page of advertising. And, you know.
So did she have a Viennese accent?
Yes, she didn't realise she did, but she used to talk about other people who sounded foreign. But she, in fact, of course she did, yes. And it was a bit dis and dat, you know.
And what about your parents' relationship?
Well, it was sort of, it was an extraordinary, very fiery relationship. I mean, they eventually divorced, and my mother married my stepfather, who was lovely too. But I think actually they just loved each other to the end. It was like, is it oil and water or something? I mean, they couldn't really live together, but they couldn't live apart.
So very passionate. She was brought up in a passionate, artistic, creative, exciting household.
Yes. I mean, they were both mountainous people. I mean, she came from mountains and my father's Scottish. He came from mountains. So it was all up or down the whole time, you know.
And did you have brothers and sisters?
My father had a son by his first marriage and who was 15 years older than me. So I sort of really was an only child, but I had the backing of a brother, you know, knowing that I had a brother, which was sort of quite nice feeling, really.
Yeah, sort of uncle brother.
Yes,
of
yeah.
So, yeah, you were first aware of interiors. What was your first kind of moment, do you think, in interior design?
Well, I think, I suppose I was about 11, and we went to Coles, and I chose this wonderful grey and white toile de jouer paper, which I decided then I'd like yellow curtains with. It's quite chic, actually.
Yes.
And then I got stuck in the toile de jouer world, and then the next bedroom was pink and white toile de jouer with pink everything.
So funny, because my first wallpaper was toile de jouer as well. I think it's a very, it does appeal to sort of the innocent person, if you know what I mean.
Yes, it's strange, and I still love it. I think,
I adore it.
In fact,
it.
I did one with a wonderful lady, and it was reminded me of Hyde Park and my life in, you know, going to Hyde Park with the dogs and the ducks on the pond and, you know, all of that. And it was very reminiscent of that. And I think one of them was ladies playing tennis. The other one was much more French. But I love it.
Joyful, aren't they?
Joyful, yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. So you landed your first job in the swinging 60s of Colfax and Flower, age 19. What influence did they have on you there?
Well, funny enough, my first job, which was also had a great influence on me, was working at the General Trading Company.
Oh, really?
Where I went at 17.
Okay.
Because I was unfortunately clearly never going to university. And my father knew the owner, and I worked in the gift department. And I absolutely loved it. There was a woman there called Dottie who ran it incredibly well. And it was all about, I mean, we sold Fornacetti. I mean, just like, oh, well, you will just order some more. I mean, no nonsense about it being special, because now it's sort of ends up in antique shops and everybody sort of, and in antique shows, you know, and they say, oh, this is Fornacetti. And we were saying, yes, well, I was selling bins, just like everybody would have a bin from Fornacetti. And we had wonderful glass. And then I went back and ran their wedding list department.
So you loved product, yes, then. You were very excited.
I think I was always very, sort of, I loved the table. And there I was, aged about, I don't know, maybe I was 20 when I went to COFET, so I was sort of 19 at the General Training Company, telling these brides, who presumably knew more than me, except they didn't, how to lay their table. You can't have that glass with that plate, it looks awful. And you're putting things together. I loved it.
Was that instinct?
I think it was, but
yeah.
But also we'd always led a fairly, you know, relatively, not boring formal, but I mean, we always ate at the table, everything was laid.
Well, that's very Viennese, it's very Viennese. They are more formal than us, definitely.
And so at home, and we had the most lovely Italian called Danilo who looked after us and made delicious souffle. I mean, the food was always good at home. And the knives, I mean, the plates, the table was always laid and the napkins were clean and pressed. There was no nonsense about napkin rings and some old napkin you've had for a week.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you had the visual influence, you found out you loved product, then you went to Colfax and Fowler, and that was more of that's were they fabrics and wallpaper then?
Well, they were, but I mean, I was working for John Fowler, so I wasn't so involved in that side of it, although obviously we had our own, you know, they had their own chintzes which we used, but not exclusively, because I don't think anybody does that. But John Fowler was just quite wonderful, actually. He really was. And I famously, it was a sort of boring story, but he asked me to make the tea the first time I got there. Well, I hadn't any idea how to make tea. I'd never made tea in my life. But I'd heard about this one for each person, one for the pot. So I sort of went along that route for a bit, and the teapot was filling up somewhat. So I then put a little bit of hot water in. And then I thought, well, this isn't going to go very far. So I poured him a cup and filled it up with milk and took it to him. And he said, what, this looks like milk soup. So I said, well, you know, this is how I made the tea. I mean, you know, this is surely how you make the tea. And he said, please never make the tea again. So I thought, well, that's a score, because now I can carry the bags and I don't have to make the tea, which obviously was disgusting.
So he was an interior designer?
John Fowler was a great interior designer. He did all the great homes. After the war, and certainly for quite a long time, you didn't have masses of people doing their own fabrics and wallpapers. You didn't have all these places selling every possible fabric and shade of fabric and trimming. We used to go down to the city where there was a sort of funny old sort of place up a rickety staircase where all these ladies and men were sitting peddling on machines to make the trimmings, making the fringes. And, you know, we died. We used to buy, there was a company also in the city called FR Street. I remember we used to buy the cotton velvet and dye it every colour we wanted. You couldn't just buy the fabric, the colour off the peg. And also, if somebody had curtains in some of these big houses, the fabric was probably still all right, but it would have gone on the edges. So he would take the curtains to pieces, dye a piece of velvet or usually a piece of velvet or heavy cotton, and put an 8-inch border all the way around. So you saved the curtain fabric.
And it probably became fashionable have it.
And also it was sort of beautiful, and the fabrics were beautiful. It wasn't all this frightful wastage, you know. So I learned a lot from that, because, I did it once because somebody I'd made some curtains for, and 10 years later they were looking a bit worn. And they said, we love this fabric. Of course it was discontinued. So I did exactly what I'd learned at Colfax. We just bordered them.
So it was still slightly make do and mend, sort of post-warish sort of atmosphere.
Yes, because what was it? It was 60. You know, there were, I mean, 45, 55, 65.
Yeah, that's hardly any time after the war. And if that's what's a shock when I realised I was born like 19 years after war or something. It's like, what? To think I can remember 40 years ago now.
Well, you know, our house that I lived in, there wasn't any carpet. So my mother bought something called Artfelt in dark green, and the staircase was, which we had this huge house on Lion Square, and from the top to the bottom was this dark green felt and brass stair rods. And they were brushed every day with a stiff brush, so it lasted forever. And when you sold a house, you took everything with you. It wasn't like you walked out and left it all behind.
So you took carpets?
Carpets, curtains, everything. And it all went to the next house and was made bigger or smaller or whatever.
Excellent. So it was more kind of work for kind of people that were in the trade.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, you see, people had to, you had to know, I mean, the stair carpet was moved all the time because you never fixed it, so that you would move it so you never wore out on the treads.
So that's why you had rods. I always wondered why.
Yeah. Fabulous. There was much more housekeeping or house whiffery, I suppose it could be called.
Exactly. So when you're 21, you cheekily told Mark Burley that the recently opened Annabelle's, the decor was awful.
Well, I'm not quite. I said that I thought the vitrines either side of the bar, I thought were a bit tacky because they were lined in a sort of white, it looked like vinyl, I think, and they were selling jewellery. And so I said, it looks really, it does look a bit tacky. The whole place was wonderful. I was there actually, you know, quite a lot. And so he said, well, why don't you come and do it yourself? You know, which I did. And I redid them in red silk. And that's how I sort of got my foot in the door there. And then I continued to do the decorating for quite a long time there.
Such fun. I mean, the most exciting club in the world, really.
It was. And it was lovely being, you know, it's quite nice sort of belonging to something that's that sort of, because yes, it was exciting and yet it was home. Because I was there, I used to go down there in the daytime. And the whole point about Annabelle's was that it was impeccable in the day as well as in the night.
I didn't realise it was open during the day.
No, it wasn't open, no. But we used to go down and make sure that, you know, everything was working, that everything, if something needed cleaning or repairing or, you know. So it was kept pristine.
What was your favourite room that you did there?
Well, the room that I really did from scratch was the Buddha room with the red lacquer walls. And I loved that. Mark went out and bought this Buddha, which was just so sort of benign. I mean, it was way before everybody sort of went on this east-west routine. And it was just the most sort of extraordinary person to be in the presence of, actually. And then we built it a stone base. And then he'd bought these Chelyuchev watercolours because he was very keen on all the Russian kind of dance and music and all that. And so those went on the wall, and I felt that red lacquer would really make the whole thing sort of pop. And then there it was, you know, shoved it full of furniture.
Was that your first sort of official interior design job, would you say?
No, because I'd done quite a lot. I mean, I had a job in a wonderful house in Shropshire called Dudmaston, which I'd done for the owners then, who had actually at that moment, on the whole, the work you did was not a new house from scratch, because everybody was redoing what they had, or possibly they'd moved into a house and hadn't really been able to afford to do the drawing room because it was like, oh God, you know, it's so
people
big.
People just weren't rich like they are now, were they?
So you didn't do that. You know, as long as you had a kitchen and a dining room and a sitting room that worked and the children and whatever, everyone was comfortable, then you put off the drawing room till you got a bit sort of more established. So there was quite a lot of that sort of decorating going on.
But in a way, that's why I love old country houses, because they've evolved more than their look, aren't they?
Also, there was, in many cases, I had a cousin who lived in a wonderful house called Ragley, and John Fowler did the sort of state rooms and I did all the upstairs. And we were just trolling through the attics trying to find little chairs that had been abandoned in, you know, when the Edwardians had thrown them out, or you know, they'd been in the 20s, they thought they weren't sort of any use anymore, so up they went. And then, of course, you fell on them and dragged them back down and gave them new clothes, and they've suddenly had a new life.
So finding treasure.
And I think that's rather like rescuing an old dog. You know, you find a piece of furniture and you think, oh my God, it's got a broken leg, and you mend it and recover it and give it a new life.
So are antiques a big part of your life as well, would you say, Nina?
Well, I think that they should be. I mean, I think they are, and they should be. I hate this thing of people saying, oh, brown furniture's out. And you think, oh God, you know,
Everything. It will look bland, won't it?
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing.
And also, you know, all this new stuff, it's not, the wood isn't seasoned. It hasn't, I quite like the idea of a table with a few marks on the top that, you know, has just been through another life and it's
You've
got a story
to bring
to tell.
Character
yes.
to it.
Absolutely. And also a mix. It's all, the English were always so clever because they all went on these tours and they brought back stuff, and it was all eclectic and mixed up.
Yeah.
And I think a room that's purely one thing is just terribly dull.
Totally, totally. So what gave you the confidence to tell people what they wanted? And I can still say now, what gives you it?
I don't know, I suppose, well, I'm a Torian, so I sort of charge in, you know, sort of thing. But I think that it's the same as sort of giving a talk somewhere. You know, I remember somebody when I was nervous saying, listen, at school you drag to a talk and you hope that the person giving the talk's going to make a fool of themselves because you hate the whole idea if you're a bad student. But when you give a talk and and everyone's they pay to come. They want to listen. They're on your side. So if somebody comes here and wants me to help them with their house, they're sort of halfway there. So they rather need somebody to hold their hand and say, look, let's try this. It'll look really beautiful. And let's keep that and maybe abandon that or put that somewhere else. And so it's rather like going to the dentist, I suppose.
So you said they're already your friend. It's hand-holding. Yeah. And
it's a journey.
Is it quite collaborative then often with your clients?
I like it to be collaborative, yes. I mean, I have done what they call show houses in America, and I always have to invent a client.
Yes.
I either find a portrait somewhere and then create the room about this person. And, you know, if they aren't anybody, I'll make up who they are. And if they are a character, I will follow their life.
Excellent.
But I think that, yes, I think, I mean, I just did a big house in America for somebody. And when we came to the end, he said, oh, God, what do we do now? So I said, well, the journey's only just really starting because now we buy things. And so about four times a year we meet and we either go look at paintings or, you know, and add to a collection of this. I've introduced him to a few people that, you know, to buy things that I think he's going to enjoy buying things from.
God, it's such fun. It's the ultimate shopping experience,
yes,
Nina,
without emptying your own bank account. It doesn't entirely work. You then see things you really like yourself.
Yes, exactly. what do you think are the characteristics of an interior designer? What would you say?
Well, I think you've got to listen and you've got to have a passion for what you're doing. And you've got to have a curiosity. Because, you know, I mean, there's nothing more fun than going and seeing something that you might, even an ugly house, you know, you just think, oh, but there's got to be something here. There's got to be something. So I imagine if you could cook, you know, you might pick up the sort of scrag end of something. And if you can turn it into a delicious meal, it's sometimes more satisfying than if you took the fillet of beef. Because anybody can do that.
And tell me about your eye. How has it evolved and is it still evolving?
I hope it's still evolving, despite having had new eyeballs put in by the other day.
Definitely seeing new then.
But I think an eye is a funny thing because I think I had a great aunt, fun enough, who obviously had a great eye way back. I mean, she was called Great Aunt Nancy. She was absolutely minute. And she started buying furniture and dealing with furniture sort of before anybody else. And I just think it's a... you can't really quantify an eye, really, can you? And maybe whatever I do with my eye, somebody else might think is really dreadful. I don't know, with their eye. You know, you never know. That's why I hate people saying somebody's got right good taste and somebody's got bad taste. If nobody really has bad taste. They've just got different taste, I think.
Gosh, you're so diplomatic.
Well, I've just been to Graceland, which I absolutely adored, and everybody was dying for me to say, you know, have you been to... And I said, yes, I have, but... It's much more important about Elvis, who I think is completely amazing. And when I went to the museum, there were all the lists of all the money he'd given to people that were not important, not going to blow his trumpet, but were poor people who really needed it, children's hospitals and pages of donations. And I said, you know, when you read that and you see what he did and you still listen to his songs, you think if he wanted a 9-foot white vinyl sofa, who am I to argue with it? You know? Why not? And he went to a local store and bought it with money he'd actually earned. I think it's amazing.
So is the taste, is it, because I suppose it hasn't changed one bit since
no,
the moment.
No, because it's all, yeah, yes. And yeah. I think it's, I'd quite like to spend the weekend there. I think it'd be rather fun.
Is it sort of 60s, 70s modernism?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And then there's the jungle room, which, you know, is sort of, it's just like being on a trip.
Fantastic. So he did enjoy his money.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And he obviously had an interior design vision himself.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you love most? Form, colour, pattern? What is it that sort of, if you said, if there's something that gets me, you know, when you're doing your wallpaper or you're, you know, designing this teacup, you know, what's the thing that gets you?
Well, I did a book years ago. My first book was on somebody called Elsie de Wolfe. And she said things should be practical. They should be in proportion. And I think those two things are really important because nothing is, I mean, I'm sure you've been to a restaurant where they've got very modern knives and forks and you pick them up and you can't eat with them because they look all right laying on the table. Somebody thinks they look all right. And yet they turn in your hand and you can't even cut your piece of meat. And I think that's ridiculous. So I like practical things. And I think practicality makes for beauty, actually, because then it never gets on your nerves. And the other thing I think is really important, and is decoration is fine, and everyone can get really anxious about it, and is this right, and is this wrong, blah, blah, blah. The most important thing, what do we all want? We want a home that we can invite our friends to, and we want to give them a good time. We want to mix people up so there's good conversation. We want to have good food, bit of music, and a lively evening. So the room is a frame, and the people inside it are the picture. And the picture's more important than the frame, I think. So, of course, I want to make a beautiful room, but I want it to be a wonderful background so that people don't fuss and think, oh, God, I can't sit on there, or oh, I've dropped something. If somebody drops something... I mean, I tend to say to my clients, here's the house, so just please have a party.
Fabulous.
And in fact, my client in New York did. I couldn't go to the party, unfortunately. I think he'd have been so nervous if I'd been there watching every glass of red wine. But anyway, he did spill the red wine, I guess.
Of course.
I got an email rather late the next day, because I think it'd been a very long party. And he said, red wine on the library carpet, but don't worry, it's come out. You know, so what? It's out. Everyone had a wonderful time. They were all there till 4 a.m. The jazz musicians were playing. He plays the piano. That's what it's for, isn't it?
It's about living.
It's living, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not about a museum.
Yeah, yeah. So who do you believe has been or still is the best interior designer in the world? I mean, apart from yourself, and you can't say that.
Well, I wish I couldn't say that anyway. Well, I suppose you could say Robert Adam was the best interior designer in the world. I mean, look what he did. I mean, everything that we're still going back to and but then I think, I honestly think that John Fowler was a really fascinating person because he wasn't all about brand new. He was all about make, do and mend. And I think that was really clever. And still some of the things, all the people he's taught are still following along what he said, you know.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if people started being, maybe after Brexit and everyone's broke.
Yeah,
people will start, you know, recycling, upcycling, using things more, being more creative, really. That's what we'd like to see.
And I think it's beginning, actually, because all that greyness is going and mid-century's on the way.
Yeah.
I think, I was just came back from America and somebody said, God, if I hear the word mid-century again, what does it mean, you know, mid-what? And I think people are beginning to buy, sort of an old chair and put a cushion on, put it in the corner, use it. I mean, put a chair beside a fireplace and stack it with books. I don't know. Just be a bit, you know.
Yeah, have
as
I? Yeah,
say,
yeah.
Be a bit more creative.
Fabulous, fabulous. So, do you believe that we are, globally more into interiors than we ever have been in history?
I think we are, actually, because there's all these, I think they're called shelter magazines, but although, in fact, they're having a hard time because everyone wants to go digital. I like to hold a magazine, like to look at a picture properly. But I think we are all into our homes more, although some of the young work so hard and so late that they literally go out from work to somewhere for dinner and then go home, sleep and get up at God knows what hour in the morning and come back out again.
And they have to live in all these shared houses because they can't afford homes.
Yes, I think that's true. And then I think that there's a lot of people on the move, so they tend to go into rentals. And when you're doing a rental, everyone says, oh, well, you must make it bland because the colour might upset somebody. And you're thinking, you know what, they'll have to just get over it. You know, I mean, I think that it's sad to live a grey life.
God, it is. I mean, I rented for about 10 years in London recently, and everywhere we went was Magnolia, and we just always said to the landlord, please, can we paint it? And they always said, yes, as long as you... So my sitting rooms are always kind of shocking pink stroke red, always. So I, you know, just have to do it, otherwise I don't feel like it's my home.
No, exactly. And if you're not, I mean, if Friday you're not there for a week or something.
Exactly, That's the only trouble. Sometimes they throw you out after a year. So you're in your early 70s. Will you ever slow down, Nina?
Well, I don't know. I think, I suppose if I felt that I couldn't get out of bed in the morning or something, but I think also you need, that impetus because to get up and move. Otherwise, I mean, you're going to be asleep somewhere for a hell of a long time, probably. I mean, my poor dog is asleep, but in my guest cupboard because I haven't quite planted him anywhere, but he will go into a rose pot. Oh. But no, I think if one can keep going, our job really is something that you can, I think, keep going. at for quite a long time. I'm sure I said to somebody asked me the same question the other day. I said, well, I'm sure when they, as they lower the coffin lid, I'll be waving a sample out, you know. Somebody, I have had a thought for someone.
Exactly. Fabulous. And what is your philosophy of life and business?
Well, I think that I think you need to encourage the young. You know, for somebody like me, I mean, I try never to not see somebody who says, I just want to start it in the business. Elsie de Wolfe said something really funny, given that she was an interior designer in about 1910, and there were probably about six. Poor Siri Maughan came along and asked her advice about becoming an interior designer, and she said, it's a very overcrowded profession, my dear, I shouldn't bother. And if you think now that every second person is an interior designer of some sort. But so I think one needs to encourage the young. I think one needs to keep your head, really. And I don't like the sort of interior design world that sort of are really kind of grand with people and tell them, oh, well, you can't, I wouldn't dream of doing anything for less than, God knows, quoting some huge sums of money. Because I think you never know. I mean, one of the jobs I did, which I enjoyed the most, not the most, but I really enjoyed, was a most wonderful woman who saw photographs of two chairs of mine in a magazine. And she said, would you ever come? It's the smallest thing in the world, but is there any chance you could make me two chairs just like that? So it turns out she lived very near where my daughter was at school. So I said, listen, if you get the coffee pot on and you don't mind me at 9:15, I'll come round because I've dropped my child at school and I'll come round. She said, perfect, I'm early. So we became good friends. She was called Susan Crossland and she was married to Richard Crossland and he widowed from him. And anyway, it turned out having written some very erudite books on politics, she then had written a sort of bodice ripper, which, of course, was a huge success. And every time I went there, she said, you won't believe it, another check's come through the door. Now can we do the drawing room and the bedroom and the thing? And we just laughed all the way. And she had this lovely flat by the end. And I thought, you know, if I'd been snooty and said I don't do two chairs, I would never have had the experience of meeting this extraordinary woman. And we'd never have gone on. And it just made us both laugh about this sort of money that kept pouring through the door because of this appalling book she'd written.
Fantastic.
I never even read it.
But. So I think sense of humour is one thing you enjoy.
Yes, you have to. Mm. You have to be able to have a laugh, actually, because, I mean, you can get into some terrible sort of situations sometime. And, you know, you just have to say, look, I mean, you do your best to get over it and things go wrong. Of course they do. But you have to, A, make sure that you can deal with it in the most professional way you can. And, something's just gone wrong in the office today. I said, look, make sure it's mended as soon as you can. And then we'll send a bottle of champagne and with an apology. And we put it right as fast as we could. It's not entirely, you know, nothing's ever one person's fault, is it? It's always a terrible chapter of accidents. Something goes wrong, it's sent back, it breaks on the way, and nobody, there's a car crash. I mean, it's never one thing. So, you know, as long as everybody understands, you get on with it and sort it out.
Great. Well, so fantastic of you to come on to Radio Gorgeous. I have so enjoyed your fabulous attitude towards life and interiors, and you are just having fun, and I think that is the key to everything. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me on Radio Gorgeous. I feel more gorgeous from speaking to you.
And for more amazing women, you can always go to radiogorgeous.com. Thanks for listening.